You wake up at 5 a.m., not because anyone forces you, but because you've convinced yourself that successful people rise early. You meditate for productivity, exercise for performance, network for advancement. By noon, you're exhausted, yet you haven't stopped moving. Sound familiar? This isn't oppression in any traditional sense. No one is holding a gun to your head, yet somehow you feel more trapped than ever. Welcome to what philosopher Byung-Chul Han calls the achievement society, a world where we've become both master and slave, entrepreneur and exploited worker, all rolled into one exhausted package. The most disturbing part? We call this freedom. Every era has its signature afflictions. The Middle Ages had the plague. The 20th century battled viral epidemics. But today's defining illnesses, depression, ADHD, burnout, don't come from external invaders. They emerge from within, born not from scarcity, but from excess. This is what makes them so insidious and so difficult to understand using traditional frameworks of health and disease. Think about how your grandfather's generation understood illness. There was always an enemy: bacteria, viruses, foreign agents attacking from outside. Society itself operated on this immunological model, clear boundaries between us and them, inside and outside, safe and dangerous. The 20th century was defined by this logic of exclusion, of protecting the self against the threatening other. But that world has vanished. Today, the foreign has been replaced by the exotic, difference without danger, otherness as entertainment rather than threat. We don't fear invasion, we fear irrelevance. Today's violence doesn't wound from outside, it exhausts from within. Not exclusion, but saturation. No one forces you to check your phone 150 times daily. The violence is unlimited access, making disconnection impossible. You don't get attacked by devices, you collapse under their possibilities. This is neuronal violence, systemic overload masquerading as freedom. Michel Foucault saw power in hospitals and prisons, institutions saying no through walls and guards. Today's landscape is fitness studios, open offices, airports, spaces of apparent freedom and endless possibility. We've shifted from a disciplinary society operating through prohibition to an achievement society functioning through invitation. The old world created madmen and criminals who violated rules. The new world produces depressives and failures who can't meet limitless expectations. Here's the cruel trick. Motivation is more efficient than discipline. When you drive yourself, you work harder than any boss could force you to. The anxiety shifts from, "Will I be punished?" to, "Am I doing enough?" There's no finish line because the standard stays just beyond reach. We don't complain about being forced to work. We lament not being productive enough, not maximizing potential, not living our best lives. The achievement subject becomes a predator and prey in one, exploiting themselves voluntarily in the name of self-fulfillment. Depression emerges when you're no longer able to be able, when possibilities paralyze and performance pressure becomes unbearable. This is compulsive freedom. You're free to achieve, but not free to rest. Hannah Arendt feared modern society had degraded humans into beasts of burden. Achievement society transformed this condition into hyperactivity and hyperneurosis. Selfhood intensified to pathological extremes, an ego just short of bursting. Without transcendent purpose, health has been elevated to divine status. We optimize bodies, track steps, monitor sleep in service of more optimization. We've become the undead, too alive to die, too dead to truly live. Everyone carries a work camp inside, simultaneously prisoner and guard. The factory walls disappeared not because work was abolished, but because it was universalized. Life itself has become work. Our society's excessive positivity manifests as an overabundance of stimuli that fragments attention. Multitasking, celebrated as modern proficiency, actually represents regression to primitive consciousness. Watch a deer eating in a field. It nibbles grass while constantly scanning for predators, listening for threats, monitoring rivals. Its attention is divided by necessity. Survival depends on never fully focusing. We've recreated this vigilant but scattered awareness, eating lunch while checking email, attending meetings while texting, watching television while scrolling social media. We've become the deer, constantly vigilant, never at rest. Yet every significant cultural achievement, philosophy, art, literature, depends on deep, contemplative attention. Walter Benjamin described deep boredom as the dream bird that hatches the egg of experience. This profound idleness creates mental space for genuine thought and creativity. But achievement society has eliminated this contemplative state. We cannot tolerate boredom while walking, so we accelerate to running, a faster version of utilitarian movement. But someone who can dwell in boredom might discover dancing, luxurious movement transcending mere utility. Without contemplative depth, civilization degenerates into what Nietzsche called deadly hyperactivity. We lose our ability to see beyond the immediate, to dwell with complexity rather than reducing it to digestible bits. We've become the deer, constantly vigilant, never at rest. Learning to see, as Nietzsche explains, requires calm, patience, letting things come to you, active cultivation of deep attention. It means not to react immediately to a stimulus, but to exercise inhibiting, excluding instincts. In our hyperactive society, this contemplative resistance has become rare yet essential. Hyperactivity often masks mental exhaustion. The person constantly checking their phone displays not energy, but its absence. They lack the mental strength to resist stimuli, to create space between impulse and action. True action requires what Han calls the negativity of an interruption, a pause allowing us to measure contingency and possibility. Our accelerated world lacks the vital betweens that make reflection possible. The loss of negativity, our capacity to say no, to resist, diminishes genuine emotion. Unlike fleeting annoyance, rage requires a temporality incompatible with acceleration. We've transformed meditation into a productivity tool. Mindfulness becomes performance enhancement. We meditate to work better, exercise to perform better, vacation to return more productive. The capacity to resist immediate reaction isn't philosophical luxury, it's the foundation of human freedom. Without this ability to say no to constant stimuli, we become reaction machines. Nietzsche's pedagogy of seeing is ultimately a pedagogy of freedom. Learning to see differently is learning to be differently. Achievement society has become a doping society, where neuroenhancement enables achievement without actually achieving, reducing vitality to mere functional capacity. Excessive tiredness isn't immunological. It results from too much positivity, too much sameness. Austrian writer Peter Handke distinguishes two kinds of tiredness. The first is divisive and solitary, destroying our power to speak and distorting perception. This is burnout's exhaustion, isolating us in failure, rendering others as obstacles, depleting empathy. But Handke also describes fundamental tiredness that loosens ego strictures and creates a between space where the other becomes I. This world-trusting tiredness shifts gravity from ego to world, making us accessible to touch. It enables lingering, inspires through not doing, and grants access to slow forms that hyperattention misses. This deep tiredness brings wonder back. Everything becomes extraordinary in the tranquility of tiredness. Like the Sabbath, this inspiring tiredness creates intervals free from in order to purposes, generating friendliness. The tired person becomes a new Orpheus, around whom even wild beasts gather peacefully. In Kafka's revision of Prometheus, the gods grew weary, the eagles grew weary, the wound closed wearily. Han sees today's achievement subject inflicting self-violence. Yet Kafka envisions healing tiredness, where recovery comes through a different relationship to tiredness itself. Perhaps we need not more energy, but a different understanding of rest, not as failure, but as foundation, not as weakness, but as wisdom. Today's achievement subject pursues self-directed goals, expecting fulfillment from work. Yet this freedom creates new constraints. Without relation to the other, recognition becomes impossible. You cannot truly reward yourself. This drives endless performance without boundaries or completion. Depression today stems not from repression, but aspiration. Not what we're forbidden to be, but what we're compelled to become. Contemporary psychic maladies reflect an excess of positivity, being able to do everything rather than not being allowed to do anything. Social networks intensify narcissism by granting attention to the ego exhibited as commodity. Burnout isn't failure of self-mastery, but the pathological consequence of voluntary self-exploitation. The achievement subject's problem isn't competition with others, but self-referential competition, the destructive compulsion to repeatedly outdo itself. When the ego cannot reach its unattainable ideal, it experiences auto-aggression that escalates to self-destruction. The way beyond burnout society requires rethinking freedom itself. Real freedom isn't unlimited possibility, but meaningful limitation. It means recovering the art of saying no, cultivating contemplative attention, distinguishing between isolating and connecting tiredness. The most radical act in achievement society isn't doing more, it's daring to do less, to rest without guilt, to exist without constantly justifying yourself through performance.